Shalom, welcome to SJTF. This is Chaim Ben Pesach. This program is dedicated to Refuah Shlema, complete recovery, for Malka Bat Simcha, and to elevating the souls of Simcha Chasdai, Pesach Vansir, Bari Hoffman, Ruven Hoffman, Harav Meir Kahana, and Yosef Ben Meir. Before we get to our many questions from our great JTFers, I first of all want to apologize for the fact that during the past 2 weeks, our Ask JTF programs experienced some minor technical problems in terms of the sound quality. Occasionally, a word or two got cut off because the sound quality was not that good. Some of our audio equipment, we've been experiencing some technical issues with our audio equipment. We're getting new audio equipment, so hopefully this problem will be solved soon. If you hear any problems with the program this week, it's possible once again that you'll hear a word cut off occasionally, that you'll hear all of a sudden me saying something and then all of a sudden the word is cut off. It's possible we'll experience that again this week. If we do experience it, again, I apologize. It should only be minor, but still, even if it's a minor difficulty, we want to have programs with perfect or as perfect as possible sound quality and we want to be able to convey our message as perfectly as possible. So I apologize for any difficulty that this may cause in terms of listening to the program. Again, occasionally a word or two might get cut off until we get this new equipment in, which we have ordered and which is on the way, and we hope that the new equipment will solve the problem, Be'ezrat Hashem, God willing. I want to speak to you again about Zionists against Clinton, because this past week we made progress in putting together an organization that hopefully will be effective in working to defeat Hillary Sodom Clinton, Yimach Shma V'Zichra, may her name and memory be obliterated, in her race for the presidency next year. I don't have to convince my fellow JTFers, because you're wise enough to understand how important it is to elect a president that will not continue the policies of Barack Hussein Obama. Hillary Clinton, we know, will continue Obama's policies. She was Secretary of State during the first 4 years of Obama's administration. And she will continue these horrible policies. Electing Hillary Clinton is like a third term for Barack Hussein Obama. It's a nightmare for Israel. It's a nightmare for the Jewish people. It's a nightmare for the United States. It's a nightmare for the world. So, obviously, we want to do everything we can to prevent Hillary Clinton, the anti-Semite, the leftist, the traitor, the dishonest, sleazy, scandal-ridden, corrupt politician. Obviously, we want to do everything we can to prevent her from getting elected to the presidency. And we still face a tough challenge. According to the polls, she still is leading, despite all the scandals and despite everything that's happened, she's still leading in the polls. She still is the favorite candidate, according to the polls, to not only win the Democrat nomination, but to win the presidency itself in the November election next year. So we've got a challenge ahead of us, but we're going to do everything we can to stop her. And this past week, we have made progress with Zionists against Clinton. You may have heard the interview that we did with Pastor Manning on his program. It's on the forum if you haven't heard it. We did an interview with Pastor Manning introducing his listeners to this concept, and Pastor Manning announced on the program that he's joining Zionists Against Clinton, that he's going to be part of it. That's very important because he brings with him a church with dedicated members and followers all over the United States who listen to his programs. And if you see him on Facebook, on YouTube, you know that on YouTube he has literally millions and millions of views for his many videos that he does on YouTube. Millions of views. And the reason he does so well, they don't take him down. They don't dare to take him down when he says controversial things. They don't remove his videos because he's black. Even though he happens to be a righteous black man, anyone who's black, they will not touch. Whereas if I said anything, even 1% of the type of controversial things Pastor Manning has said, they right away would remove my videos. We also have videos with hundreds of thousands of views. We've got videos that have gotten a lot of attention, but he has much more because he's able to put it all on one account, and on that one account that never gets removed, he's able to say what he wants. He doesn't have to worry about that. So he has millions and millions of people. So getting him to join us in Zionists Against Clinton, getting him to be part of it is a major boost for our cause. And he, of course, he's a very articulate and righteous and charismatic leader. And so we're always very happy to work with him. We're going to be meeting with other important people, including a couple of meetings that we hope to schedule this week with some important people. I can't go into details in advance until we get the support of these people, but we expect to meet with a couple of other important people this week to try to get them involved with our campaign. And if they agree to get involved, it'll also be a major boost for us. So we're hoping that Zionists Against Clinton takes off as something that will be an effective force to try to prevent Hillary Sodom Clinton from getting elected to the presidency, God forbid. Of course, none of this would be a problem. For Israel, it would not be a problem if we were in power. Because as we have always mentioned, if we were in power, when a president or anyone else tells Israel to freeze Jewish building in Judea and Samaria, we would ignore them. We would ignore what they say. We wouldn't listen to them. Or if they tell us that we can't defend ourselves and destroy Iran's nuclear bomb-making program, we would ignore them. We would immediately send the Israeli Air Force in, if we were in power, to destroy Iran's nuclear bomb-making program from the air. Or if they tell Israel that she has to retreat from Judea and Samaria, create a so-called Palestine state, we would ignore all of that. We would do what we have to do to survive, and we would not allow ourselves to be vulnerable to pressure. That's if we were in power, but unfortunately we're not in power. Unfortunately, you have leaders who are weak, who are cowardly, who are not honest people, like Netanyahu. You have leaders like this who always give in to pressure, and so there is a freeze on Jewish building in Judea and Samaria, and Iran is being allowed to build nuclear bombs without any interference from the Israeli military, even though it threatens Israel's very survival, and there's a threat of a nuclear holocaust, God forbid. All of these dangers are allowed to fester and grow because we have leaders in Israel that don't do the right thing. So because of that, it is very important for Israel's survival. It is very important who is elected to the presidency. That is a very important issue because we have leaders in Israel who give in to American pressure, unfortunately, for that reason alone. And therefore, we can't ignore that, and we have to do everything we can to try to influence the presidential election so that we can try to save Israel from national suicide, God forbid, try to save the world, Israel and the world, from the prospect of a nuclear Iran, a Muslim terrorist Iran with nuclear bombs, and then that, of course, will lead to a nuclear arms race in which a dozen or so other Muslim terrorist nations will also acquire nuclear weapons, God forbid. It will be the ultimate nightmare. And that's where we're headed right now with the Obama-Clinton policies. That's why she must be defeated. We have to stop her. And I hope we have enough time. I hope that Iran doesn't get nuclear bombs before the next president takes office. I hope it can still be stopped by then. But we have to do whatever we can, the best that we can, to make a difference in this case. So I think it's very clear why this is important as far as who the next president is, why it's important, why it's critically important for the survival of Israel, for the survival of America, for the survival of the world. And in addition to that, in addition to understanding what's at stake, I think we also know that, of course, it's possible that we won't succeed. It's possible that Clinton will get elected anyway, despite what we do. That, God forbid, but that's possible. Even if that happens, God forbid, if we reach millions and millions of people with our message, at least we are educating a lot of people and we're bringing ideology and truth and facts to a lot of people, and that also strengthens our cause, and that's also very important, and that can strengthen our movement so that we will be in a better position to resist the pressures of a Hillary Clinton, if God forbid she does become president. Of course, we're hoping that we can avoid that scenario altogether and that she doesn't become president at all. And we hope that the Republican that we would like to see in the White House, of course, the ideal Republican would be Ted Cruz, God willing. In any event, just wanted you to know that behind the scenes, aside from the fact that Pastor Manning has now joined us, we're going to be meeting with other important people, and we hope to bring other people into our movement, including some important people, and we hope to make a real difference with the Zionists Against Clinton movement, because it's vitally important that not only that Hillary Clinton be defeated, and not only that there be a major battle against her, but that it be focused on the pro-Israel agenda. that she and other politicians know that there's a price to be paid for the anti-Israel, anti-Semitic policies that Obama and Clinton have pursued all of these years. They're going to pay a price. That's what we have to show politicians. And that's the one way that we hopefully can deter politicians from wanting to pressure Israel. At least they'll see there's a price to be paid. So there are many things at stake here, and it's very important that we succeed with this. And we're going to be working on this. We hope to release hundreds of videos, God willing, on this subject in the next 18 months until Election Day next year. We hope to be releasing very large numbers of videos, reaching large numbers of people, God willing, educating large numbers of people, reaching new audiences. And hopefully this will also affect Israeli Jews, because a lot of the videos we do are going to be in Hebrew on this subject. And in our Hebrew videos, of course, we focus on why Israel should have leaders that pursue a policy of military independence, economic independence, no more U.S. foreign aid, and why Israel should not give in to pressure, and why Hashem, why God, is the true friend and ally of Israel, and the Jews should do what God commands them to do in the Bible. That is the way to truly secure a better future for Israel and for the world. So let's hope we succeed. We need your help. Very, very important that we get your help in making this a success. Once again, we got to work together as a team if this is going to be successful. So I urge you, please help us with the following. Number one, we need your prayers. Please pray for our success. This is a very critical period we're entering into now. We're meeting with important people. We're trying to get this thing organized, Zionists against Clinton. We want this movement to be organized, both because it's important to defeat Clinton and because it helps us educate Americans and Israelis about the issues that are important to us. We're going to use this as a tool to educate people as well. So please pray for our success. It's very important that we succeed. If we have an impact on this election, and if we reach millions of people, we can change history in this election. So please pray for our success. And secondly, when you see us put up Hebrew and English videos, help us with those videos, help promote those videos on YouTube and on Facebook and everywhere else. Please promote our videos. And in addition to that, we have a news site, of course, JTF.org, news site that Shlomo, that the great Shlomo puts together. It is a fantastic news site. It is the best news site on the internet. You want to know what's going on in the world? You should check our news site first thing. First thing every day, you should check our news site. Every single day, you should check that news site, because you're going to see articles and facts and stories there, updated stories every day that you won't see anywhere else. So become active on that news site, comment on the news site, spread the word, tell other people about the news site, and check it yourself every day, because we always have important information and facts. And finally, so we've given you three things so far that you could help us with. Number one, we need your prayers. Number two, help us with the Hebrew and English videos. Number three, go to our news site, comment on it, spread the word, help us with the news site, JTF.org. Number four, last but not least, of course, every check, every money order, every cash donation sent to our post office box makes a huge difference. The more money we receive, obviously, the more people we can reach. Obviously, the stronger we are as a movement, and the more of an impact that we can make, the more of a difference we can make. So we need your support. We need your support now more than ever. Checks, money orders, cash donations sent to the post office box do make a big difference. God bless the great JTFers that are sending us, generous financial support on a regular basis. God bless you. And if you prefer, for convenience sake, instead to do it online, instead of sending through the mail checks, money orders, and cash donations, if you prefer, for convenience sake, to do it with your credit card online, that's fine also. You can do it by just going to the donate button on our Hebrew main page. On the top on our Hebrew main page is a donate button in English. Our Hebrew main page, of course, is hayamin.org. You go to hayamin.org, and on top there's a donate button in English, and in several minutes you can very conveniently, through PayPal, make a donation. And it doesn't matter if you make the donation with your credit card online, or if you make the donation by sending it through the regular mail to our post office box. Makes no difference to us. It makes a big difference. It does help us tremendously. It makes no difference how you decide to assist us. Either way that you decide to do it, whether it's by credit card or by mail, it is promoting a very good cause, obviously, a very essential and noble cause, the cause of defeating Hillary Clinton, the cause of saving Israel and the Jewish people from catastrophe, this cause of educating the American and Israeli public on issues that no one else will speak about. All right, so I just wanted you to know that I think that there is a chance that encouraging things can be happening. I don't know how successful we're going to be in the end, but I think we have a chance here. I think we have a chance here to make a difference. And I'm hoping that the contacts that we're making and the people that we're planning to meet will enable us to make a real difference in this process, and that will ensure that our point of view reaches a much larger number of people, and that this will enable us to persuade people to support sane, God-fearing, Bible-true, Torah-true policies for a change. God willing. All right, let's go now to our questions from our great JTFers. And we start out with Lewinsky Stinks, Dr. Brennan Rocks, who writes, and I quote, please say this in a self-hating Jewish voice. Oy vey, it's Jewish American Heritage Month. The lesson of the Holocaust is we need to have gay marriage. Unquote. Okay, I think that speaks for itself, the self-hating message there. And Lewinsky Stinks writes, and I quote, please discuss Helen Thomas's long-lost sister, Madeleine Albright, Yimach Shma V'Zichra, and her pathological hatred of the Serbs, unquote. Oh, you're so right, Lewinsky Stinks. I mean, Helen Thomas and Madeleine Albright do look like sisters. I mean, they look like twin sisters. Oh. And you notice they both also look like Yasser Arafat. Have you ever noticed? They're what I call the Arafat lookalikes. They all look like Yasser Arafat when he hasn't shaven. Have you ever noticed that? Anyway, Madeleine Albright is of course the self-hating Jewish beast. She was one of the Clinton Jews. One of the nightmares about Bill and Hillary Clinton is they bring to the White House the worst Judenrat Kapo Jewish anti-Semites in the world. The worst collection of Jewish anti-Semites they bring to the White House. Madeleine Albright was made Secretary of State in Clinton's second term. She became Secretary of State. This is someone who pretended she wasn't Jewish. She never mentioned she was Jewish. She always pretended that she wasn't Jewish. And then all of a sudden, when the media did research and said, hey, wait a minute, you come from a Jewish background, your family has a Jewish background, then she said, oh, I never knew. Yeah, sure. She was a professor in European history. She didn't know that her original name was a very Jewish name. Come on. And a name that was known to be a Jewish name in the Czech Republic where her family came from, in Czechoslovakia where her family came from. She's such a liar. Okay, she's one of these ashamed Jews. John Kerry also, by the way. He has, on his father's side, he has a Jewish background. He also tried to hide that. You know, these are the ashamed, assimilated Jews that try to hide what their background is. Kerry's not Jewish, but his father had Jewish blood in him. So, you know, he wants to bury the Jewish people. He hates the Jews. And Madeleine Albright also, these self-hating Jews, they are so filled with self-loathing and with this masochistic desire to destroy their own people and to bury their own people so that they won't be associated with something that they're so ashamed and embarrassed about. It's really unbelievable. Anyway, Madeleine Albright, the Yimach Shma V'Zichra, that filthy whore, she did indeed have a pathological hatred of the Serbs like Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton, if you recall, also was hysterical against the Serbs. I mean, she compared them to the Nazis and she wanted to bomb them back to the Stone Age. I mean, Hillary Clinton and Bill Clinton, they're the ones that created this nightmare situation for the Serbs, where you now have three Muslim terrorist nations that have been taken away from the Serb people. Albania is a Muslim terrorist nation. Bosnia is a Muslim terrorist nation. And Kosovo is a Muslim terrorist nation. Of course, Kosovo is really Serb territory. So is Bosnia. That's all part of Yugoslavia. They have no these Muslim terrorist countries that the Clintons created have no right to exist. And Hillary Clinton and Madeleine Albright they were obsessed with destroying the Serbs and fighting against the Serbs. After all, the Serbs were the one people that didn't murder Jews and didn't persecute Jews during the Holocaust and that loyally fought against the Nazis. So, of course, Clinton and Albright and these other filthy Jew-hating animals, you know, they hate the Serbs. They, of course, want to side all the time, always want to side with the Muslims. So this is one of the nightmares that we face when we bring the Clintons, God forbid, back into office, which, according to the polls, again, is likely to happen unless we succeed in turning that around. Lewinsky Stinks now writes, talk about Rabbi, quote-unquote, Michael Lerner and his tikkun rag, unquote. Well, Michael Lerner, the deformed so-called rabbi, and his tikkun rag, as you correctly refer to it, these are Jewish anti-Semites of the worst type. Lerner started out his career by going to temples and interrupting Yom Kippur services, the Day of Atonement services, saying Jews have to atone for the sins they've committed against blacks. He would start heckling in the service and say, we must atone for the sins we committed against black people. And, of course, he supports the Arabs and he supports the destruction of Israel and he works day and night to undermine Israel. Of course, that's what Michael Lerner and his so-called magazine represent. They are the scum of the earth, absolutely the scum of the earth. Lewinsky Stinks now writes, why do most American Jews worship Negroes as gods? Unquote. First of all, because most American Jews are ashamed to be Jewish and assimilated and don't want to defend, they long to defend some just cause. They have one little spark of Jewishness that they have in them is the desire to be idealistic and to defend the underdog. That is a Jewish trait, the desire to defend underdogs. Because the Jews historically were always history's ultimate underdogs. But they don't want to defend their own people. The Jews would be the ultimate underdog to defend. I mean, look at little Israel surrounded by the whole Muslim world and the whole world wants to destroy little Israel. Israel's the ultimate underdog. No, they don't want to defend that. No. In fact, they want to work to destroy Israel. So what do? They pick another underdog. So the other underdog they picked were the blacks. And then when the blacks expressed their gratitude by being vicious anti-Semites, that made the Jews even more supportive of them, because another aspect of assimilated, self-hating Jewish behavior is you always support your enemies. You suck up to your enemies and support your enemies, because this shows how impartial you are. This shows how fair and balanced and impartial you are, that you're willing to bend over backwards and support those who want to destroy you, who murder you. You're going to support them because you're showing how objective you are. Our great leader, Moreno Verabbeinu, Harab Mir Kahana, Zecher Tzaddik VeKadosh Livracha, our teacher and our rabbi, Rabbi Kahana, always called this the Jewish disease of objectivity. It's always on the one hand, but then again on the other hand. You know, they always have to be objective. They can never take a straight stand against evil. It's always on the one hand, but on the other hand, but you have to understand, and after all, you know, always. And so, you know, and so as part of this disease of objectivity, they bend over backwards to support the most evil, cruel, vicious, murderous enemies of their people. And when the blacks show that they are, in fact, every bit as vicious, and most blacks are in America are every bit as viciously anti-Semitic as the worst Muslims and the worst Nazis, when blacks demonstrated this type of behavior, that made American Jews even more desirous even more interested in supporting them. So, this is part of the Jewish mental illness. Again, the Jews need a national couch. And JTF is the national psychiatrist for the Jewish people. That's the role JTF plays. We are like a national psychiatrist. And the Jews need a national couch. Thank you, Lewinsky Stinks. We go now to Wandering Samurai 81, who writes, and I quote, is Fran Drescher a self-hating Jew? Isn't she also the same age as you and also from New York? Unquote. First of all, she's a year younger than me, I think. I think she's a year younger than me. And she is from New York. Yes, that's very true. And, oh boy, is she a self-hating Jew. And how is she a self-hating Jew? Of course. I mean, you think she'd be successful with Hollywood, with television? You think they'd let a proud Jew be successful? Are you kidding me? Of course she is. Oh, by the way, she's not only from New York, she's also from Queens. So she's from the same part of New York that I'm from. Okay. So that's not something I'm proud of. Anyway, first of all, she's been married twice. First, she was married to a Jew who then announced that he's a homosexual. That was her first wonderful thing, and she thought it was wonderful because she's very, very, very pro-homosexual. Then, after they divorced, finally, she married someone outside of the Jewish faith. She intermarried. She, of course, is a very active supporter of the gay radical agenda and of homosexual marriage and everything else that goes against the Torah Jewish way of life. Her acting roles were always all immoral, evil acting roles, naturally. Her portrayal of Jews, the worst stereotype, more stereotypical anti-Semitic portrayals imaginable. If she were black and she did this with blacks, you can imagine what they would do to her. And of course, politically, she supports Hillary Clinton and Barack Hussein Obama. She supported Clinton. She supported Obama. She supports all of the enemies of the Jewish people politically. So, on every front, she is evil. Thank you, Wandering Samurai. And we go now to Joe Gutfeld, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, if Ted Cruz doesn't support Israel like he actually does, would you still support him, unquote? I think what you're asking is, if Ted Cruz weren't pro-Israel, would I support him because of the stands he takes on other issues? Absolutely not. Any Jew that supports someone who is not good for the Jewish people and for Israel is a traitor to the Jewish people, is scum, subhuman scum. Subhuman scum. Absolutely not. Absolutely not. Now, that doesn't mean that his positions on other issues are not important also. They're also important. I mean, the fact that he has taken good positions on the other, or better positions than the other candidates, at least on the other issues, that also helps. But the first issue that I look for is Israel. It's the first issue God cares about if we read the Bible as well. And I'm talking about how Jews should never support someone who isn't pro-Israel. Obviously, that's obvious. That goes without saying. Gentiles also should never support anyone who isn't pro-Israel, because God commands everyone to support Israel. That's what it says in the Bible. Everyone. Thank you, Joe. We now go to DGR81, who writes, and I quote, Hello Chaim, do you have a Vine account? If not, JTF should get it and use it to put short clips of your videos. Thanks, unquote. I'm not sure how that works. I don't know how it works. I don't know anything about Vine. If you want to do it for us, by the way, if you want to open a Vine account for JTF, or if somebody else wants to, fine. I mean, we're very busy with the things we're doing right now, but if somebody in JTF wants to open an account for us with Vine and wants to put our videos on there or short clips of our videos on there, well, why not? Why not? Absolutely. Thank you, DGR. And we go now to Dr. Dan, the voice of reason, common sense, and logic, who writes, and I quote, One, is it a Kiddush Hashem, sanctifying God's name, for Israel to help a neutral country when disaster hits like Nepal, unquote. I don't think Nepal is a neutral country. I don't think none of these countries are neutral. They all vote against Israel in the UN. They all support the Arabs. They're not neutral. I mean, they're not. It's just not true. So, you know, there are no neutral countries out there. they don't exist. They just don't exist. So no, I don't think it's a Kiddush Hashem. We don't have enough problems in Israel for the Jewish people, desperate situation of the Jewish people, that we have to go right away rushing huge amounts of assistance to try to prove ourselves. No, I don't think it's a Kiddush Hashem. Dr. Dan now writes, too, your thoughts about Nepal. Well, one thing that Nepal does that's very bad, aside from the fact that they vote against Israel like everybody else in the UN, and they would never have their embassy in Jerusalem like everybody else, which means none of the countries are pro-Israel. None of them. They're all against us. They all have their embassies in every Muslim capital, but they won't recognize the one capital of the Jewish people. That's anti-Israel. They won't even recognize our right to our own capital. So, obviously, they're all against us. I mean, the governments of the world are against us. That's just a fact of life. And one thing that Nepal does that's really, really bad, they provide incubator babies. I don't know if you call them incubator babies, but test tube babies for so-called gay couples in Israel. What happens is you have these homosexuals from Israel, homosexual so-called couples. They go to Nepal. They get some woman there. And they give us, and she artificially, she receives their sperm, gets pregnant, and she gives birth to a baby, and they take the baby and bring it back to Israel and raise the baby in the so-called gay family. That's what they were doing. In fact, a lot of the Israelis who were caught in this latest disaster were in fact homosexuals who had babies there who wanted to get the local women there to get pregnant and to give birth to babies so that they could do this terrible thing. And of course the babies then are passed off as Jewish, which they're not. And the babies are raised in a household where you have two sodomite men committing an atrocious abomination in the Holy Land, and they're raised to think that this is normal. I mean, this is child abuse. It's cruelty. It's disgusting. Any baby that comes into this world has a right to a father and a mother and a normal home. No baby and no child should ever be put in a home with two perverts living in the house, teaching them about gay marriage and gays and about men becoming women and women becoming men. This is a disgrace. This is the worst type of child abuse. And Nepal tolerates that. And hundreds of Israeli homosexuals are involved in trying to get babies from Nepal through this method. And that's a disgrace. That's something that should definitely be stopped. Dr. Dan now writes, 3, talk about Bruce Jenner. Okay, speaking about the I don't know if he's a homosexual. I don't know what he is. I have no idea what he is. I don't know what goes through his mind, and I don't know what he's all about. All I know is that the person that when I was a teenager, he was considered to be one of the top athletes, and certainly in the Olympics. I mean, he broke all types of records. He was very athletic, and women loved him. And you know, he could have gotten the most beautiful women. I mean, women went crazy over him. And here he is now. You see the interview he does where he looks like a woman. He looks like a woman. He's gotten plastic surgery to the point where he can't even. He has a hard time even speaking. His face is so stretched. And he looks like a woman. And he wants to have the surgery done to become a woman. This is a very sick, demented individual. And the thing that is being made acceptable and being legitimized now is the worst type of demented behavior. And this goes against the laws of God and against the laws of nature. It is completely unacceptable and completely against the laws of God and nature what he's doing. He is either completely insane, or he just wants publicity. He craves publicity so badly that he's doing the craziest, weirdest thing anybody could ever do. But what I'm shocked about is the reaction of so many people saying, oh, he's so courageous. Oh, it's so nice. Oh, I mean, what, is everybody going nuts? Am I the last person in the world that thinks that this is insane? Am I the last person in the world that thinks this is crazy? I mean, what the hell is wrong with everybody? This is what we want our children to be seeing on TV. This is the so-called role model. This is just, how could any parent want their children to watch this and think, oh, this is a good role model. Yeah, this is something I'd want to be. God forbid. This is insane. Am I the last person in the world that thinks this is crazy? Wow. Just crazy. Anyway, thank you, Dr. Dan. I'm glad you brought up important topics as always. And we go now to Binyamin Yisrael, who writes, and I quote, A, comment on 1, James Rubin, hate department court Jew, married to Christiane Amanpour, Yimash Mavazichra. And if, and you also mentioned after that, you mentioned Dennis Ross and Martin Indyk. Let me put the first three together. James Rubin, Dennis Ross, Martin Indyk. All three of them are the type of Judenrat capo Jews that the Clintons bring to Washington. This is what happens when you have the Clintons in power. This is who you bring into power. Remember we mentioned before Madeleine Albright. Actually, for the Jewish people and for Israel, in some ways, Hillary Clinton is even worse than Barack Hussein Obama, believe it or not. Because Hillary Clinton, like Bill Clinton, they surround themselves with these self-hating Jews. Obama also has self-hating Jews. The Secretary of the Treasury is this guy, Lou, who calls himself an Orthodox Jew. Yimach Shmo V'Zichro, this animal, Obama's Treasury Secretary, complete animal, who went to argue before Congress for the Iranian nuclear deal. I mean, he's arguing for something that will lead, God forbid, to the incineration of millions of his fellow Jews just so he can suck up to his boss, Obama. I mean, this is the lowest, and he claims to be an Orthodox Jew, this guy Lou, who is Obama's Treasury Secretary. So Obama also has his self-hating Jews, but the Clintons, they completely surround themselves. There was a point where like half of Bill Clinton's cabinet were all self-hating Jews. I mean, this was just unbelievable. This was like his cabinet was like a chapter meeting for J Street. You know, it's a nightmare for the Jewish people. And Dennis Ross, Martin Indyk, James Rubin were all examples of that. Those are the self-hating Jews that the Clintons bring to Washington with them, all for the purpose of getting Israel to commit suicide. They deliberately bring in a lot of Jews because they know that if you bring in Jews, they're not going to accuse them of anti-Semitism, and it's going to be a lot easier to convince these stupid Jews to accept national suicide, so they bring these animals in. So this is part of the nightmare of having the Clintons in power. All of these self-hating Jews, all three of these self-hating Jews, James Rubin, Dennis Ross, Martin Indyk, played a major role in the Oslo agreements, in trying to get Israel to commit national suicide, in doing everything they could to undermine Israel on every front, on every issue, all the time. So, you know, the danger here is tremendous. They were special envoys to the Middle East, and Indyk was the ambassador to Israel, and, you know, he brought in all the self-hating Jews, the Clintons. So, you know, this is what we're going to be facing. This is what Bill Clinton did, and his wife Hillary, she does the same thing. She has the same policies. Benjamin now asks about Donald Rumsfeld, Dick Cheney and Donald Rumsfeld. Okay, Dick Cheney and Donald Rumsfeld, and then he writes, I always thought that Cheney and Rumsfeld were pro-Israel, at least as much as the Israeli government, but better than Bush, Powell, and Congolese or Rice. I don't think Cheney and Rumsfeld were pro-Israel. I don't think we've had anybody that's pro-Israel. Pro-Israel means you're against Israel giving up anything, and you're in favor of Jewish settlements, and you're in favor of the right of the Jewish people to their own land, etc., etc. That's pro-Israel. I don't think Cheney and Rumsfeld were pro-Israel, but I agree with you, they were not as bad as Bush, Powell, and Congolese Rice. I agree with you. You know, Powell and Congolese Rice, here you have two black Republicans. Look at this. Even when they're Republicans, look what happens. Powell, as soon as he had that black Muslim animal Obama running for president, he endorsed Obama for president. Powell, the so-called black Republican, that, by the way, John McCain wanted to make Secretary of State. He said if he gets elected, he's going to make Colin Powell his Secretary of State. And polls showed that Colin Powell was the front runner among Republican voters, was the front runner for the Republican presidential nomination in 2000. Now, he decided not to run because he was scared. He was afraid he was going to be assassinated. His wife told him he's going to be assassinated. But he was the front runner among Republican voters. And what does he do the first chance he gets? When Obama runs, he endorses Obama for president. I mean, look how sick. The Republicans are also nuts. But absolutely, Powell, Bush, and Congolese Rice were worse for Israel than Cheney and Rumsfeld. I agree with you. Thank you, Benjamin. And we go now to Smash Islam, who writes, and I quote, thoughts, Michael Lucas. Michael Lucas is the Israeli homosexual pornography actor and writer. He's of Russian descent, a Russian Jew who lives in Israel and lives in Israel for many years. And he himself starred in many homosexual pornography films. And he produces all types of homosexual pornography about Israel with Israeli actors and Jewish actors. Do I even have to say what a disgrace this is? Do I have to say what an abomination, what a toeva, what an abomination this is to God and for the Jewish people? Yimach shmo v'zichro tehem, for all the harm he does to Israel and the Jewish people, for all the people that he corrupts with his evil, abominable, sick activities. Smash Islam now writes, two, Quran alone, a movement of hadith rejectors. Yeah, there's a movement of Quran alone where they're not interested in the hadith. In some ways, by the way, the Quran, first of all, the Quran alone is an insane book. The Quran is an insane book. So how much of a help is that? True, the hadith is also insane. Then you have other insane books if you're adding the hadith. But the Quran, in and of itself, is completely insane. So that's not very helpful. But in some ways, they're even crazier than the classic Muslims who believe in the Hadith as well. For instance, they're against circumcision. They don't circumcise their baby. I mean, one of the good things about one of the few things that they adopted in Islam that you could say is a good thing is the fact that they adopted circumcision. You could say that that's a good thing. I mean, obviously, it's healthier and so on. You know, you could say that that's a good thing. They're against, the Quran alone movement is against that. They also support intermarriage with Jews. That's really, really bad. And by the way, when I say circumcision, Gentiles, of course, are not required to be circumcised. And righteous Gentiles can be, B'nai Noach, the followers of Noah, do not have to be circumcised. I think it's healthier if they are circumcised, but they're not required in terms of religious obligation to be circumcised. It's not one of the commandments for the followers of Noach. If they want to, they can. I mean, they certainly are permitted to do it, but it's not required. Nevertheless, Quran alone is they're against circumcision. They say it's barbaric, and they're against intermarriage, and they support intermarriage with Jews. Whereas the traditional Muslims, the regular Sunni and Shia Muslims, would say they're against intermarriage with Jews. They would say the Jew has to convert to Islam first, which makes intermarriage less likely. So in terms of assimilation, in terms of their ability to create intermarriage with Jews, this movement is even worse than the traditional Sunni and Shia Muslims, or the Wahhabi Muslims, or the other crazy groups they have. Smash Islam now writes, David Douche says ISIS was created by Zionists. Yeah, well, look, one of the techniques of David Duke and the other Nazis is always to blame the Jews for everything. First of all, I don't know why he has a problem with the Islamic State. The Islamic State is doing the same thing the Nazis did. And he's a Nazi and David Duke is a Nazi, so why should he have a problem with that? I don't understand that. But, his absurd statements, are just beyond the pale. We don't debate with people like David Duke. You don't debate with Nazis. You don't have conversations or dialogues with Nazis. You destroy Nazis. And David Duke is a Nazi. Smash Islam now writes, four, Lars von Trier. Lars von Trier is another pornographer. He's a Danish pornographic writer, and he's the one, if I'm not mistaken, I think he's the guy who said that he understands and sympathizes with Hitler. And if I'm not mistaken, his father was a Jewish atheist. So his father was a Jewish atheist. Look at what these intermarried situations cause. His father was a Jewish atheist, and he's saying that he understands and sympathizes with Hitler. And then he says he's not an anti-Semite. No, not much. Thank you, Smash Islam. And we go now to Kalman ben Menachem, who writes, and I quote, Reb Chaim, can you teach us something from the prophet Jeremiah with relevance to now? Thank you. Okay. Jeremiah the prophet, Yirmiyahu Hanavi, was a prophet during a very tragic time for the Jewish people. At first, when he was a prophet, we had the temple, we were living in the land of Israel, things were going fine. And he starts prophesizing that things are going to get very bad, that really bad things are coming for the Jewish people. And so he was hated because the Jew, one thing Jews don't like, do not come to them and bring them bad news. Okay, the Jews do not take that well. They go crazy if you bring them bad news. Rabbi Kahana said the Jews are like little children. You have to give them candy all the time. You can't tell them the truth. You're not allowed to tell them the truth. They're not interested in the truth. They want to hear lies. I mean, what did they say to the prophets? They said, prophecy unto us delusions. They wanted to be deluded. They wanted to live in a fantasy world. When Jabotinsky warned them the Holocaust was coming, they said he was a madman. They said, what are you talking about? Germany is our Jerusalem. What are you talking about? We're Germans. We're not Jews. We're Germans of Mosaic persuasion. The Germans recognize that we're Germans. They know we're loyal to Germany. What you're saying is nonsense. Jews live in fantasy world. They want to live in a fantasy world. They don't want to be warned about the truth. That's the sad reality from history. And when Yirmiyahu Hanavi, when Yirmiyahu was trying to warn the Jews about this, they hated him. And they persecuted him terribly. They tortured him. They persecuted him. They tortured him. And it was a dark period because eventually then Israel did face destruction and exile. But Yirmiyahu never compromised. He never told the people only what they wanted to hear. Even if it was sad and even if it was painful, he told them the painful truth. He never compromised. If they had listened to him when he first started warning them, if they had listened to him, they could have avoided a lot of the pain and suffering that they went through. But instead of listening to him, instead of waking up and listening to him, they insisted upon continuing with their evil ways and instead wanted to kill the messenger. And the eventual catastrophe that came, they hated him for it. But now everybody understands that he's one of the most revered prophets in Jewish history, a truly courageous, noble Jew who stood up and tried to save his people and suffered terribly because he wanted to save his people from disaster. And isn't he a lot like Moreno v'Rabbeinu Harav Meir Kahana, Zecher Tzaddik v'Kadosh Livracha? Rabbi Kahana also never compromised, was always willing to tell the hard truth to the Jewish people and pay the price for it. Isn't that a lot like Rabbi Kahana and the Kahanists, what we see with the great Jeremiah? And history, you know, history will remember those who stand for the truth and are willing to pay the price. History and God will remember them favorably forever. Those who take the easy way out, the politically correct way out, history will remember them with contempt. Thank you, Kalman. We go now to Chicago Jew, who writes, and I quote, with evidence so overwhelming, why does this country still worship blacks? Will this country ever wake up, unquote? Great question, and I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. I think if we were exposed, if our views were exposed, if JTF were exposed to huge numbers of Americans, I think then a lot of people would wake up, because we would tell it like it is. You know, the rioting, violent, hateful blacks in Baltimore who blame white racists and white racism for problems that they themselves create. All the things that they themselves are responsible for, they blame whitey for. You know, these six cops who were arrested in Baltimore, what a disgrace. Three out of the cops are black. Three out of the six were black. And this animal, this affirmative action animal with an IQ in the single digits, who became the state prosecutor. She's the state prosecutor. She's a moron. She's a racist, evil, ugly, stupid moron. And she right away indicts them and charges them with murder. I mean, talk about rush to judgment and bias and prosecutorial bias. What a farce. What a farce. The black community today in America is not a community. It's a lynch mob. It's a lynch mob of drug addicts, alcoholics, illegitimate children, criminals, housing project bloodsuckers, welfare recipients, food stamp recipients. And those who support them. That's the vast majority of blacks in America today. And the time has come for someone to stand up and tell the truth about it. But no one dares to tell the truth. That's the problem we face, and that's why America's going down the drain. That's why the country's going down the drain. Until we get someone who will tell the truth and who will reverse these policies, this country will have no hope. Thank you, Chicago Jew. We now go to Truth Seeker, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, discuss Russell Brand, armchair socialist, fakestinian sympathizer, who everyone in the UK loves so much, affirmative action for retards, unquote. Well, Russell Brand is, you know, he's the comedian. I don't think he's funny, by the way. I don't think he's funny at all. But anyway, he's the British comedian. For many years, of course, he was a long-time drug addict, a heroin addict, and a drug addict. Now he's a vicious Jew hater. He supports the Muslim terrorists in Gaza and calls for the boycott of Israel. And he actually says the British media is biased toward Israel. The British media is biased toward Israel. I mean, you couldn't have a more Nazi-like reporting on the Middle East than from the British media. I mean, literally, they report on the Middle East like Nazis. Their hatred for the Jews is so vicious. Al Jazeera and the Arab media do not report with more venom than the British media. It's the same level of venom that you'd see in the Arab or Muslim media toward Israel. Complete Nazi Jew hatred. And this animal, Russell Brand, says the British media is biased in favor of Israel. He complains that there's media bias in favor of Israel. Media bias in favor of Israel. There's not one thing they say that isn't an anti-Israel, anti-Semitic lie in the British media. Anyway, he's a vicious Jew hater and just a vicious animal. I hope he starts taking drugs again and kills himself and takes an overdose. Thank you, Truth Seeker. We go now to Guns N' Roses fan who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, a few days ago another Jewish girl was almost raped by the Sudanese savages, or Schwarzes. Okay, Sudanese Schwarzes. I don't know, I just instinctively I said savages. Why would I say that? Why, oh why would I say that? Anyway, the leftist Israeli media didn't even mention it, unquote. Of course, the leftist Israeli media supports the Sudanese Schwarzes, supports the invasion of Israel that's taken place. Two-thirds of South Tel Aviv has been overrun by African Muslims and other African, just African illegal aliens that have flooded into Israel. Not Jews, African illegal aliens that have flooded into Israel and that are raping, murdering, doing what Africans love to do. That's two-thirds of the population now of South Tel Aviv. Tel Aviv is Israel's biggest city. We don't have enough problems with the millions of Arabs there. We have to bring in hundreds of thousands of illegal aliens. I mean, it's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. The only hope we have is to have new leaders in Israel, because the leaders we have now in Israel are setting the Jewish people up, God forbid, for another Holocaust. That's literally where we're going. God forbid. They're setting the Jews up for a spiritual holocaust and a physical holocaust. God forbid. Chas v'chalila. The Jews of Israel better wake up. And we in JTF will try the best we can to wake them up. We're going to be doing Hebrew videos. We're going to try to wake them up as best we can. And of course, we are in touch with people behind the scenes. And I hope that we'll be able to have an impact on the next Israeli Knesset election, whenever that comes, a couple of years from now or a few years from now. We're working on all of that. We're trying and we're working on all of that. But the Jews of Israel must wake up, and they must wake up quickly. Thank you, Guns N' Roses fan. We go now to... And by the way, it's not hopeless. Don't think it's hopeless. And if we catch a break and we ever get the real big money that we need, then it's certainly not hopeless. Then we really have a fighting chance. But it's not hopeless. We've got to fight. We've got to do the best we can, and we can't be silent. We go now to Tzelhar, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, can you comment about Rabbi Aharon Lichtenstein, who recently passed away, also about his colleague, the late Rabbi Amital, unquote. Well, first of all, I wouldn't call them rabbis. Okay, traitors who support giving away the heartland of biblical Israel, Judea and Samaria, and even giving away our capital, Jerusalem, are not rabbis. Amital, that animal Yehuda Amital, Shem Reshaim Yerkav, formed the Meimad Party. The Meimad Party are Meretz with Kippot. They are radical left-wing people who claim to be religious and who favor the vivisection of Israel. And that's what Lichtenstein and Amital and all this subhuman garbage, that's what they represent. And they are subhuman garbage. And I see on Arut Sheva and everywhere else, they're mourning, he passed away, it's so terrible. Oh, please, please, these beasts, what these beasts did, telling Jews in the name of the Torah, in the name of Judaism, in the name of they claim to be Rashi Yeshivot, and they use their position to brainwash Jews and teach Jews that we're supposed to give our land away to murderous Nazi enemies that want to exterminate us? They're vile. Vile. Absolutely vile. Worse than Peace Now. Worse than Meretz. Worse than the worst Jewish anti-Semites. Worse than Chadash. Worse than the secular far left. People who claim to be religious and are on the far left? The lowest of the low. The worst. They supported Shimon Peres, they supported Oslo, they supported Gush Katif, the expulsion in Gush Katif, they support the pre-1967 suicide borders. I mean, the scum of the earth. And then they call themselves rabbis? Scum! Shem Reshaim Yirkav. Thank you, Tzelhar. We go now to Mr. VSS, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, please discuss the biblical story of Joseph's imprisonment, unquote. Okay, Joseph was, of course, one of the 12 brothers that Yaakov Avinu, that Jacob our father had, that became the 12 tribes of Israel. And Joseph was sold into bondage by his brothers and went to Egypt, and they put him in bondage. And he worked. At first, he worked in the home. He worked in the home of one of the very wealthy Egyptians there. But then, eventually, he was thrown into prison. It's a long, involved story. I don't want to go into all the details of the story because if I do, we'll do a 1 hour. I'll have to take a whole hour just to go through the story of Yosef. But he was put in prison for 12 years. And Chazal, the rabbis, teach us that some of the reasons he was put into prison are to learn humility and wisdom. One of the things Yosef did with his brothers, he created this atmosphere where his brothers were jealous of him because he was a dreamer. He had prophetic vision, prophetic dreams. There's no question that his dreams were going to come true and did come true. But sometimes you shouldn't express these things if it's going to create jealousy and hatred. You don't want to create unnecessary jealousy and hatred, especially with your brothers. You don't want your brothers to hate you and be jealous of you and create conflict with your fellow Jews. And he did that. He said that he dreamed about his brothers eventually, using symbolism, that his brothers and his father and mother would eventually bow before him. And of course there was symbolism involving stars and the moon and the sun. His parents were the moon and the sun, and his brothers were the stars, but they all bowed before him. And the whole atmosphere he created there was an atmosphere where he was the superior brother. And I don't think he had bad intentions, and Chazal doesn't claim that he had bad intentions when he did this. But you have to be sensitive to how, even if you want to convey a message. If it's an important message and you have to convey a message, sometimes you have to convey a message that's unpopular and it's important to convey the message. And sometimes it doesn't go over well. But you have you have to be sensitive to how you do it, because you don't want to create hatred with your brothers. And you have to be humble. You have to be humble. And he learned humility, and he learned wisdom, and he learned true emunah, he learned true faith in Hashem, and how to speak before Pharaoh and before others. He learned all of this during the 12 years he was in prison. It was a painful experience, but it prepared him for when he was released to become, to eventually become the viceroy of Egypt, to become the second most powerful, actually the most powerful person, because Pharaoh really gave him control of Egypt. He, in effect, became the king of Egypt, the most powerful nation in the world. After these 12 years in prison, he went from being a lowly prisoner to becoming, in effect, the most powerful person on the face of the earth. What an amazing story that was. But that's the story of the imprisonment of Yosef, and some of the reasons that we look for as to why he was imprisoned and why he had to suffer for 12 years before becoming the ruler of Egypt. Thank you, Mr. VSS. And we go now to PMN, who writes, and I quote, "Iran duped the world with their nuclear deal. Why risk it by contradicting Obama, threatening seizing ships?" Okay. Why are they risking it? Because they also want to dominate the Arabian Peninsula, and they want to expand their influence and their hegemony over the entire Middle East, and they believe they're not risking it. They believe they've got this deal in the bag. They believe that they have this in their pocket already, that there's nothing Obama won't do, and I think they're right. I think Obama and John Kerry will do anything to get this deal. So they know that they're not really risking it, or at least they feel they're not really risking it. I hope through some miracle, I hope miraculously that God makes them crazy and they do something that actually does blow the deal up. But it's very, very hard to see how this deal can be stopped, because Obama and Kerry are so anxious for this deal, so desperate for this deal. They're offering, they want to give Iran $50 billion and immediately remove sanctions. And every concession under the sun they want to give the Iranians. And the Iranians are not having to give up even one out of the 19,000 centrifuges. Nothing. It's all an unbelievable legitimization and even assistance to Iran. They're assisting the Iranians in going nuclear. And they couldn't care less if Iran does go nuclear. Couldn't care less. And the Iranians know it, so they don't feel that they're endangering or risking the deal. PMN now writes, why do even exiled Christian Iranians support them? Support who? The Christian? I don't know that exiled Christian Iranians support them. Support the Iranian regime? I don't think that's true. No, I don't think that's true. I mean, you'll always find certain people that the regime gets to make statements. But I don't think exiled Christian Iranians, I don't think the vast majority of exiled Christian Iranians, I don't believe support the regime. I don't believe that to be true, no. Okay, thank you, PMN. And now we go to Hiram, who writes, and I quote, "Could you please elaborate on who was Agent John O'Neill as a man and on his problems with the Clinton and Bush administrations," unquote. Okay. John O'Neill was the FBI special agent in charge of their terrorism investigations in the 1990s. And I got to know John O'Neill because I wanted to warn the FBI about what was coming next after Rabbi Kahana was murdered. After Rabbi Kahana was murdered, the reason JTF was originally formed, the first thing we decided to do was to try to get justice against the murderers of Rabbi Kahana, because they got off scot-free. They were just going to walk. After murdering Rabbi Kahana, they were just going to get away with it. And we could not tolerate, we couldn't live with that. We could not tolerate that situation. So we started a campaign to prosecute the murderers of Rabbi Kahana, and that was our main focus as an organization for the first 2 years of our existence. That was our number one focus. And so we met with FBI agents and eventually with John O'Neill. When I say we, I met with John O'Neill. And he dismissed my warnings at first, until the bombing of the first bombing of the World Trade Center in 1993. After the first bombing of the World Trade Center in 1993, he realized that there was something real over here, that this was not just me just trying to get revenge. I mean, of course, I was trying to get revenge for the murder of my leader, of my rabbi, but I was also trying to stop innocent people from getting murdered now by these same terrorists. So he began to take me seriously after that. After the first bombing of the World, if you recall, the World Trade Center was bombed in 1993. 6 people were murdered in that bombing. Over $1 billion in damage was done. They put a bomb in the basement of the World Trade Center. And then soon after, it was business as usual. They went back to business as usual. Everybody said, oh, this is nothing. And of course, I kept warning O'Neill. I kept saying they're going to go back to the World Trade Center, and this time they're going to bring down the whole World Trade Center. They're going to destroy it completely, because they're not happy with what happened with just six people getting killed. They wanted to kill 50,000 people, because during its peak, 50,000 people were working in the World Trade Center, and they wanted to kill 50,000 people. And O'Neill began to take more and more seriously my warnings. And then eventually Sheikh Rahman and the other beasts who were involved in the murder of Rabbi Kahana, they were eventually arrested. But I continued to warn O'Neill that the danger still existed, that there were still other people, other terrorists, Muslim terrorists, who were going to come back to the World Trade Center. This was still going to happen. And he began to take it seriously. And I showed him the Saudi connection. I showed him that the Saudi regime was connected to this, and the Saudis were encouraging this, and the Saudis were financing this Wahhabi terrorism. And he became more and more convinced that my warnings were real. And he began to push in the FBI and began to urge the Justice Department to conduct investigations and to give him the ability to investigate. And they didn't like it. They didn't like it. And so they pretty much pushed him out. And he was pretty much pushed out of his position there, because he started to issue warnings. And he started to demand investigation, and he was doing the best he could to try to get things moving, to save people's lives. When he was pushed out, he finally got another job. What was his job? Head of security at the World Trade Center. On his first day on the job was September 11th, 2001, when the World Trade Center was attacked. And he, of course, was murdered along with over 3,000 other people. John O'Neill, I found, was an honest person, and he really wanted to try to prevent this tragedy. At first, when I first met him, I didn't like him. I thought he's another one of these feds, you know, because I don't like people who work for the federal government in general. I don't like. So I thought he was another FBI. You know, the FBI, I mean, usually their agents, it's very unpleasant dealing with the FBI under any circumstances. Of course, as you know, I had run-ins with them because of my activities with the JDL, but I'm saying under any circumstances, nobody likes the FBI. The police can't stand the FBI. Nobody likes them. But I saw that John O'Neill was not like that, that he was a different type of person, and I would meet with him, and we used to have long discussions, and I tried to convince him, and I was convincing him. And I was convincing him that what I was warning about was going to come true. And unfortunately, it did come true, but but it came true in a way where there was nothing he could do about it anymore, because when it came true, he was murdered along with everybody else. The Clinton administration and the Bush, the beginning of the Bush administration, ignored all of these warnings, and they are responsible for what happened. By ignoring these warnings, by allowing this to continue, and by covering up the Saudi connection to all of this, the blood of these people is also on the hands of the administrations involved. Thank you, Hiram. And we go now to Gimatria, who writes, and I quote, "What are your thoughts on Eva Kaur? Where is she going in the next world?" She's going to a very warm place. She's a hideous person. She was one of the people who was experimented on by Mengele, Dr. Mengele, Yimach Shmo V'Zichro, the monster who did experiments on Jewish inmates in the Nazi concentration camp. And she was experimented on. And there's no question she went through a terrible experience, but her main thing in life was to organize concentration camp survivors to say, we forgive the Nazis and we forgive Dr. Mengele. In fact, there was a documentary created where she was the star person in the documentary, where she said, "Forgiving Dr. Mengele." That was the name of the documentary, "Forgiving Dr. Mengele." She forgave Dr. Mengele. She forgave the Nazis who murdered over 6 million Jews. Who the hell does this beast think she is? Who does she think she is to forgive these monsters for what they did to over 6 million Jews? In whose name is she speaking? She should drop dead. She's already so old, but she should drop dead and burn in hell with Mengele and with all of her Nazi friends. And she just went to the trial of this other Nazi who now, at the age of 90-something, was finally arrested after murdering 300,000 Jews, assisting in the murder of 300,000 Jews. And she went to meet with him and say, "I forgive you, I forgive you." What a beast. Because of beasts like her, we have Holocausts. And no, I will never forgive and never forget. I will never forgive her. And I'll never forgive the other Jewish cowardly traitors who bring these catastrophes upon the Jewish people. These evil animals who become friends with the Nazi mass murderers. Yimach Shmam V'Zichram. And now Gimatria asks, how is David ben Moshe these days? Baruch Hashem, David ben Moshe is doing well and following events as always. And I am in touch with him, thank God, and I think he's doing well, Baruch Hashem. Thank you, Gimatria. And we go now to Spiraling Leopard, who writes, and I quote, "Shalom Chaim, I have refuted the Lashon Hara committed by Orim Shimshon, a.k.a. Ayman Shalash, against you. Please curse him," unquote. Well, this is an Arab who lives in London and pretends to be a defender of Israel and the Jews. But the minute he's questioned by the police, he starts giving them information about other Jews, about Jews. He's an informer. He gives information. The police question him. He panics and he gives information. This is someone who absolutely should never be trusted. And all the foolish Jews that are making friends with him and giving them information and giving their personal information to him, this is an informer. This is someone who will sell you out in 2 seconds. He's bad news. He's bad news. I don't know what he said about me. I have no idea what he said about me. I don't even know what you're referring to, Spiraling Leopard, but I know that when Spiraling Leopard says something, it's true. Spiraling Leopard is 100% truthful and credible and courageous and a wonderful hero. So when Spiraling Leopard says something, it's true. But this guy is bad news. People should stay away from this person, because his motives are not sincere and are not authentic. And he hands over information. If he hands over information to the British police, he hands over information to other people as well. Who knows? Who knows who else he'll share the information with? Maybe he'll share them with Muslims. Maybe he'll share, who knows what he might do. He is not to be trusted. Shem Reshaim Yirkav, may the name of the wicked rot. Thank you, Spiraling Leopard. We go now to Tag Mechir Tzedek, who writes, and I quote, comment on Ethiopian police protests in Israel, unquote. The Ethiopians were being brutally attacked sometimes by the police. The police in Israel, the Israeli police, are brutal with Jews. With the Arabs, they use kid gloves. And with enemies of the Jewish people, they use kid gloves. But with Jews, they're brutal. So the Ethiopian Jews are fighting back. I wish the Jewish settlers in Judea and Samaria would do this. I wish they would do what the Ethiopian Jews are doing. The Ethiopian Jews are setting a good example to show these police in Israel, the Bolshevik police in Israel, to show them that some people are not going to take this. Tag Mechir Tzedek now asks, too, Lag Ba'Omer, fake holiday? Lag Ba'Omer is the 33rd day in the counting of the Omer. The counting of the Omer, between Pesach, Passover, which is Passover, and Shavuot. Shavuot is the Feast of the Tabernacles, I think you say in English. It literally means weeks in Hebrew. Between these two holidays, you have 50 days. Why? Oh, I hope I can bring this down to so that it won't be too long, the answer here. The world, nature, is represented by the number six. And there were 6 days in creation. Why? Why is six representing the physical world and creation? And seven also represents it. But so let's start off with six. Six is the four winds of the world: north, east, south, west, right? That's four. And then on top and on bottom, that's six parts of the world, six parts of the physical world, right? You have the four, the north, east, south, west, the four sides of the world, and then you have on top, on bottom, that's six different sides of the world. And then in between is the seventh. The seventh is the spiritual part of the world. I hope this isn't going to get too complicated. But anyway, the six physical parts of the world are represented by the number six, and then this in between, what's inside in between is the seventh, representing the Sabbath, representing Shabbat. And so we're taught that the number seven, that's why weeks are created by seven. Why do we have 7 days in a week? You don't have to have 7 days in a week. I mean, the world goes by this, but we don't have to have it. But we do have 7 days in a week because seven symbolizes the physical world. And so we have seven times seven, 49, plus one more day, 50 days for the counting of the Omer. It is getting complicated. And it's going to take too long for me to answer this. So let me just say this. We have 50 days, the counting of the Omer, 50 days. On the 33rd day, we have something called Lag Ba'Omer. Lag Ba'Omer is the 33rd day. And it ends the mourning period because we're mourning during those 33 days. We're mourning the fact that 24,000 yeshiva students of Rabbi Akiva died. It was a terrible tragedy for the world. 24,000 of his students died during this period of the year. And we mourn this every year now. We mourn this every year now. Why? Because if those 24,000 students had lived, the world would have been a completely different place. We would have had tremendous spiritual, because they were spiritual. They were spiritually gigantic people in terms of their knowledge and their Torah ability and their ability to teach. We could have had the redemption many years ago. So we mourn their death and we mourn this period. But at the end of 33 days, we have Lag Ba'Omer. We end the mourning period and people can cut their hair again and do various other things, and it's no longer get married and various other things that we don't do during the first 32 days. And there are Kabbalistic reasons for this and other reasons for this, but I don't I don't know if I would say it's a fake holiday. We're celebrating the fact that the mourning period is ending. I don't know that it's a fake holiday. I wouldn't. I mean, you could say it because of the connection to Kabbalah, which certain aspects of Kabbalah, which there may be a machloket, there may be a difference of opinion on those, on that. But I don't know if I would say it's a fake holiday. I don't know if I would say that. Thank you, Tag Mechir Tzedek. And we go now to Righteous Indian Gentile, who writes, and I quote, "Do you think that the Iranian-based proxies will enter and destabilize Saudi, and how does this affect Israel and USA?" Unquote. I don't think Saudi Arabia is better than Iran. The only thing that makes Iran worse than Saudi Arabia is that Iran is close to building nuclear bombs. That's it. Without nuclear bombs, Iran and Saudi Arabia are two Muslim terrorist states, and one is just as bad as the next. The one thing that makes Iran worse is that Iran is close to building nuclear bombs. Saudi Arabia has spread terrorism over the years just as much as Iran, no less, and has done just as much harm as Iran. The 9/11 attacks were financed by Saudi Arabia. So the battle between the Saudis and the Iranians and the Sunnis and the Shiites and the whole Yemenite civil war, which is something, by the way, that's been going on since the 1960s, actually. There was a Yemenite civil war even in the 1960s. This whole battle that has been going on. I'm happy to see Sunnis and Shiites and Muslims all fighting with each other instead of murdering innocent people. I'm glad when the terrorists, the Sunni terrorists, are killing the Shiite terrorists and vice versa. So, you know, I'm not worried. Saudi Arabia is not something that we should be defending. Saudi Arabia is an evil, terrorist-supporting country that's ripping off the whole world with their oil sales, complete rip-off, and they've stolen trillions of dollars from the world since the 1970s. So, you know, we have the evil Saudi regime is not something we should be protecting. What we should be doing, instead of worrying about Yemen and instead of worrying about Arabs killing Arabs or Muslims killing Muslims, instead we should get rid of the Iranian nuclear threat. That's the number one threat that we should be concerned about. Thank you, Righteous Indian Gentile. And I want to thank everybody else for another program that I very much enjoy doing. Until next week, Shalom.